11. When the artist, formerly known as Hawkins, came in on the Friday following his first visit, the mustache was a trifle fuller, but his step was just as tentative. A shy animal approaching a bit of tasty bait. By then, Drew had learned a great deal about him and his family, and about the notebook pages, those two. Three different computer apps had confirmed that the letter to Flannery O'Connor and the writing on the photocopies were the work of the same man. Two of these apps compared handwriting. The third, not entirely reliable given the small size of the scanned-in samples, pointed out certain stylistic similarities, most of which the boy had already seen. These results were tools laid by for the time when Drew would approach prospective buyers. He himself had no doubts, having seen one of the notebooks with his own eyes 36 years ago on a table outside the Happy Cup. "Hello," Drew said. This time he didn't offer to shake hands.
"Hi."
"You didn't bring the notebooks."
"I need a number from you first. You said you'd make some calls."
Drew had made none. It was still far too early for that. "If you recall, I gave you a number. I said your end would come to $30,000.
The boy shook his head.
"That's not enough, and 60-40 isn't enough either. It would have to be 70-30. I'm not stupid. I know what I have."
"I know things, too.
Your real name is Peter Saubers. You don't go to City College. You go to Northfield High and work part-time at the Garner Street Library."
The boy's eyes widened.
His mouth fell open. He actually swayed on his feet, and for a moment Drew thought he might faint.
"How?"
"The book you brought. Dispatches from Olympus. I recognized the reference room security sticker. After that, it was easy. I even know where you live, on Sycamore Street."
Which made perfect, even divine sense. Morris Bellamy had lived on Sycamore Street in the same house. Drew had never been there, because Morris didn't want him to meet his vampire of a mother, Drew suspected. But city records proved it. Had the notebooks been hidden behind a wall in the basement, or buried beneath the floor of the garage? Drew was betting it was one or the other.
He leaned forward, as far forward as his paunch would allow, and engaged the boy's dismayed eyes. "Here's some more. Your father was seriously injured in the City Center massacre back in 09. He was there because he became unemployed after the downturn in 08. There was a feature story in the Sunday paper a couple of years ago about how some of the people who survived were doing. I looked it up and it made for interesting reading. Your family moved to the north side after your father got hurt, which must have been a considerable come down, but you Sauberses landed on your feet. A nip here and a tuck there with just your mom working, but plenty of people did worse. American success story. Get knocked down, arise, brush yourself off, and get back in the race. Except the story never really said how your family managed that, did it?" The boy wet his lips, tried to speak, couldn't, cleared his throat, tried again.
"I'm leaving. Coming here was a big mistake."
He turned away from the desk. "Peter, if you walk out that door, I can just about guarantee you'll be in jail by tonight. What a shame that would be, with your whole life ahead of you."
Saubers turned back, eyes wide, mouth open and trembling.
"I researched the Rothstein killing, too. The police believe that the thieves who murdered him only took the notebooks because they were in his safe along with his money. According to the theory, they broke in for what thieves usually break in for, which is cash. Plenty of people in the town where he lived knew the old guy kept cash in the house, maybe a lot of it. Those stories circulated in Talbot Corners for years. Finally, the wrong someones decided to find out if the stories were true. And they were, weren't they?"
Saubers returned to the desk, slowly, step by step.
"You found his stolen notebooks, but you also found some stolen money, that's what I think. Enough to keep your family solvent until your dad could get back on his feet again. Literally on his feet, because the story said he was busted up quite badly. Do your folks know, Peter? Are they in on it? Did Mom and Dad send you here to sell the notebooks now that the money's gone?" Most of this was guesswork.
If Morris had said anything about money that day outside the Happy Cup, Drew couldn't remember it, but he observed each of his guesses hit home like hard punches to the face and midsection. Drew felt any detective's delight in seeing he had followed a true trail.
"I don't know what you're talking about."
The boy sounded more like a phone answering machine than a human being.
"And as for there only being 6 notebooks, that really doesn't compute. Rothstein went dark in 1960 after publishing his last short story in The New Yorker. He was murdered in 1978. Hard to believe he only filled 6 80-page notebooks in 18 years. I bet there were more. A lot more."
"You can't prove anything."
Still in that same robotic monotone. Saubers was teetering. 2 or 3 more punches and he'd fall. It was rather thrilling.
"What would the police find if they came to your house with a search warrant, my young friend?"
Instead of falling, Saubers pulled himself together. If it hadn't been so annoying, it would have been admirable.
"What about you, Mr. Halliday? You've already been in trouble once about selling what wasn't yours to sell."
Okay, that was a hit, but only a glancing blow. Drew nodded cheerfully.
"It's why you came to me, isn't it? You found out about the AG business and thought I might help you do something illegal. Only my hands were clean then and they're clean now."
He spread them to demonstrate.
"I'd say I took some time to make sure that what you were trying to sell was the real deal, and once I was, I did my civic duty and called the police."
"But that's not true. It's not, and you know it."
"Welcome to the real world, Peter," Drew thought. He said nothing, just let the kid explore the box he was in.
"I could burn them."
Saubers seemed to be speaking to himself rather than Drew, trying the idea on for size.
"I could go to where they are and just burn them."
"How many are there? 80? 120? 140? "They'd find residue, son. The ashes. Even if they didn't, I have the photocopied pages. They'd start asking questions about just how your family did manage to get through the big recession as well as it did, especially with your father's injuries and all the medical bills. I think a competent accountant might find that your family's outlay extended its income by quite a bit."
Drew had no idea if this was true, but the kid didn't either. He was close to panic now, and that was good. Panicked people never thought clearly.
"There's no proof." Saubers could hardly talk above a whisper. "The money is gone."
"I'm sure it is, or you wouldn't be here. But the financial trail remains. And who will follow it besides the police?"
"The IRS."
"Who knows, Peter? Maybe your mother and dad can also go to jail for tax evasion. That would leave your sister, Tina, I believe, all alone. But perhaps she has a kind old auntie she can live with until your folks get out."
"What do you want?"
"Don't be dense. I want the notebooks. All of them.
If I give them to you, what do I get?"
"The knowledge that you're free and clear, which, given your situation, is priceless."
"Are you serious?"
"Son."
"Don't call me that!"
The boy clenched his fists.
"Peter, think it through. If you refuse to turn the notebooks over to me, I'm going to turn you over to the police. But once you hand them over, my hold on you vanishes because I have received stolen property. You'll be safe."
While he spoke, Drew's right index finger hovered near the silent alarm button beneath his desk. Pushing it was the last thing in the world he wanted to do, but he didn't like those clenched fists. In his panic, it might occur to Saubers that there was one other way to shut Drew Halliday's mouth. They were currently being recorded on security video, but the boy might not have realized that.
"And you walk away with hundreds and thousands of dollars," Saubers said bitterly. "Maybe even millions."
"You've got your family through a tough time," Drew said. He thought of adding, "Why be greedy?" But under the circumstances, that might sound a little off. "I think you should be content with that."
The boy's face offered a wordless reply. "Easy for you to say."
"I need time to think."
Drew nodded, but not in agreement.
I understand how you feel, but no. If you walk out of here now, I can promise a police car waiting for you when you get home.
And you lose your big payday.
Drew shrugged. It wouldn't be the first, although never one of this size, that was true.
My dad's in real estate, did you know that?
The sudden change in direction put Drew off his stride a bit.
Yes, I saw that when I was doing my research. Has his own little business now, and good for him. Although I have an idea that John Rothstein's money might have paid for some of the startup costs.
I asked him to research all the bookstores in town, Sauber said. I told him I was doing a paper on how e-books are impacting traditional bookstores. This was before I even came to see you, while I was still making up my mind if I should take the chance. He found out you took a third mortgage on this place last year and said you only got it because of the location, Lacemaker Lane being pretty upscale and all.
I don't think that has anything to do with the subject under discussion.
You're right. We went through a really bad time, and you know something? That gives a person a nose for people who are in trouble. Even if you're a kid, maybe especially if you're a kid, I think you're pretty strapped yourself.
Drew raised the finger that had been poised near the silent alarm button and pointed it at Sauber's.
Don't fuck with me, kid.
Sauber's color had come back in big, hectic patches, and Drew saw something he didn't like and certainly hadn't intended. He had made the boy angry.
I know you're trying to rush me into this, and it's not going to work.
Yes, okay, I've got his notebooks. There's 165. Not all of them are full, but most of them are. And guess what? It was never the Gold Trilogy. It was the Gold Cycle. There are two more novels, both in the notebooks. First drafts, yeah, but pretty clean.
The boy was talking faster and faster, figuring out everything Drew had hoped he would be too frightened to see even as he was speaking.
They're hidden away, but I guess you're right. If you call the police, they'll find them. Only my parents never knew. And I think the police will believe that. As for me, I'm still a minor.
He even smiled a little, as if just realizing this. They won't do much to me, since I never stole the notebooks or the money in the first place. I wasn't even born.
You'll come out clean, but you also won't have anything to show for it. When the bank takes this place, my dad says they will sooner or later, and there's an old bomb pan here instead, I'll come in and eat a croissant in your honor.
That's quite a speech, Drew said.
Well, it's over. I'm leaving.
I warn you, you're being very foolish.
I told you I need time to think.
How long?
A week. You need to think too, Mr. Halliday. Maybe we can still work something out.
I hope so, son.
Drew used the word deliberately.
Because if we can't, I'll make that call. I am not bluffing. The boy's bravado collapsed, his eyes filled with tears. Before they could fall, he turned and walked out.